This is one of the few gospel sites that can be identified with perfect precision. If you enter in through the Lion's Gate on the eastern wall of the Old City and walk about an eighth of a mile and turn right into the compound of the Church of St. Anne, a 12th century Crusader church, it's all right there for you to look at to this day. The pool of what we call in English of Bethesda. This story happens in the fifth chapter of John's Gospel. And there is there at the pool of Bethesda, by the way, the name Bethesda, Bet in Hebrew, Aramaic is house. Thesda is an ambiguous word, or it has a dual meaning because it means both grace or mercy as well as shame and disgrace at the same time. So it's as if the name given here is a place or a house where those who have been shamed or disgraced are shown mercy. How did he get that name? Well, the pool of Bethesda there in Jerusalem, in the old city, was fed by underground springs. Every now and then, there would be a surge of that underground spring, which would cause a disturbance on the surface of the pool, and there was a legend, that if you were the first person in the water, when that happened, an angel of the Lord would heal you. Therefore, lots of invalids gather around the pool of Bethesda. The blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. More than likely, most of them gathered there because a lot of other people went to the pool of Bethesda as well. And it was a convenient place to beg for alms. So Jesus is there today, this grand place that actually King Herod had renovated with colonnades, a portico there, and he zeroes in on a particular invalid. We're told in the text that he had been there for 38 years, which is kind of an odd number, which is one of those places in the Gospels that lends authenticity to the historical accuracy. Somebody remembered. He probably remembered. Had been there 38 years. And the sense of the story is that this is a paraplegic. Remember, in the ancient world, people in society was not nearly as compassionate and sympathetic to the disabled. There were no wheelchairs, handicapped accessible entrances and ramps and parking places, prosthetics, special hospitals. It just didn't exist. And in fact, people wondered if you were found yourself in that situation, there was something in your life that may have been deserving the shame or the disgrace. So imagine this guy. He's been there 38 years. That's, I mean, just about my age. And I don't know why that elicits such a laugh. Imagine that in Jerusalem, somebody who in his condition would have had to drag himself around with his arms and his hands through dusty streets with animal leavings. This is a miserable existence. And this is the one among all the invalids there at the Pool of Bethesda that Jesus singles out. We might want to ask, what was it about him? And Jesus asks him a question, do you want to be made well? And his response, and I myself am not as sympathetic as I should be, strikes me as a little whiny. Do you want to be made well? The Lord of the universe asks him. He goes, well, you know, I can't get in the water. Every time the water gets stirred up and, you know, I'm trying to get in, somebody jumps in ahead of me and nobody helps me. And Jesus says, get up. And he gets up. If you had just been diagnosed with a terrible illness, you know, and your pastor, Christine, comes to you and says, do you want to be made well? You just found out you have cancer. Christine asks you that. You look at her like, yeah, of course I want to be made well. Does this sound like an insensitive question that Jesus is asking this invalid? We need to hear this in a different context. I believe that the reason Jesus goes to this one is precisely because he has been there so long, and his condition is a kind of a sign of people who have been living in their brokenness for an awfully long time. And what happens when people live in their brokenness for an often very long time? Persistent. Month after month, year after year. Somehow, some way, it is in our nature as fallen humanity that we can kind of make our peace with it. This is not good. There's suffering. But I've learned to manage. I've learned how to get by with what isn't right, what's broken, what's sick, what's bent, what's disordered in my life. And the idea of changing, just, it seems rather daunting. Maybe I'm more comfortable with my brokenness as it is, as I've made peace with it, than I am with the thought of what would have to happen for me to be well. Many of you recall that great movie, Shawshank Redemption, a prison movie. And you may remember there was a character in the movie, a secondary character named Brooks, who was the prison librarian. And he served many decades for a crime he had committed. And then when he was 73 years old, he is paroled for good behavior. And there's a scene of him on a bus leaving the prison, and he is absolutely terrified. He's become so comfortable with his life on the inside of his prison that the idea of life outside of that prison scares him literally to death, and he commits suicide. Again, a sign of how we all can be living inside the prisons of our chronic, persistent patterns of brokenness. I was just talking the other day to a young couple that's getting married here, premarital counseling, and I shared with them that when I have the privilege of talking to married people, especially people who've been married for a good long time, and they want to come and talk about their brokenness, I will often, almost always, in fact, ask the same question. Can you identify the precipitating event that led to your sitting here right now? And 9 times out of 10, the answer is no. Somewhere, way back, things weren't right. And perhaps each of them knew it wasn't right, but they just kind of went on anyway. Made peace with what wasn't right in their marriage relationship, and 38 years later, maybe. It's scary how big that canyon is between them. But they made peace with it. They have an unhappy marriage. Do you want to get well? I don't even know what that would look like, they might say. I have no idea. This is one of the most important questions that Jesus will ever ask you and me. One of the most important questions in the Gospels. Do you want to be made well? And the implication here is that we can respond to the question. It is Jesus who asks. It is Jesus' power that will get us up. But it's not an imposition. It's not going to be forced upon us. So the first step is to answer truthfully about ourselves that, yes, I do want to be released from these patterns of brokenness that have enslaved me all these years, whatever it may be. And the second step is to trust and to take a step, knowing that the step you take is with Jesus. Again, it is a sad but undeniable part of our fallen human nature that we are more likely to make peace with what is broken in our lives than we are to have sort of spiritual imagination and courage and trust in God Almighty to get up and step out of our ruts. Because you know what? The idea of that sounds like it might be the way of the cross. And we hesitate before that. It might be hard. It might require us to give up something. It might require us to die to whatever enslaves us to these patterns. And that is why one of the seven deadly sins in the moral tradition of the church is sloth. We think of sloth as laziness. That's not what it means. Sloth in the tradition of the church and its moral teachings is inertia. Paralysis. Not moving. And Jesus comes into the world, as he comes into the world of this paraplegic who's been there for 38 years and says, move. Get up. If you want to be made well, get up. Dorothy Sayre says that sloth stays alive in us because there is nothing that it would die for. Think about that. Sloth stays alive in us. The spiritual inertia, because there is nothing it would die for. And this is precisely what Jesus, I think, with this invalid and with each of us today, is zeroing in on. This kind of spiritual lethargy. This kind of acceptance of things being the way they are because that's just the way they are, and we've made peace with it. We've learned to live with it. And we don't know what we require to get out of this rut. Jesus asks us, are you willing to die to your unwillingness to work with your spouse on some long-standing marital patterns causing real problems? Are you willing to die to your ambitions, probably born of insecurities, that make you think you have to strive so hard to succeed in this or that kind of professional way in order to be who you think you're supposed to be? Are you willing to die to your alcohol, to your gossip, to your social media addiction, to your porn watching, to anything that prevents you from real, genuine, loving relationships? Are you willing to die to any or all of that? So I guess it was just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we had Billy Cervini right here, friend of mine and somebody who's going to be helping us with pastoral counseling, not as a member of the staff, but someone we're partnering with that we think could really connect with our members. We had long conversations with him, with other leaders in the parish. The consensus, in fact, the unanimous opinion was we really need this. We need easy access for people to talk to somebody to work out their problems because we have problems. He called me this week. He said, Lee, everybody I've met at St. George's says, man, this is great. We're so glad you're here. Nobody's calling me. I said, I know. That's who we are, and that's exactly why we have you. This is going to take time. Do you want to be made well? Or do you want to live out your days in the pattern of life that you already have? So I've shared this before in conclusion. I know that some of us have this idea that when we die, you know, what does Judgment Day look like? You know, here's the silly image that I've harbored for a long time. I'm going to go before the Lord. I'm going to be led into a movie theater where a film is going to be put together, and it's going to be spliced together of every bad thing I've ever done in my life, all my bad moments, and I'm going to have to sit there in this darkened theater with Jesus and watch it. And then he's going to look at me, and now do you know why I died for you? And I'm going to say, wow, thank you. That's probably not the way it's going to happen. If there's a movie theater and I'm going to have to go sit in it, my hunch is it's going to be more like this. I'm going to see a film of my life the way it could have been, and the way it was meant to be, in every way that Jesus intended when I came into this world. I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to go, oh my God, if only I had been willing to die to all those other things that trapped me in the life that I actually led, to trust you, and to get up and walk in your way instead of staying stuck in my ways. It may be the most important question that Jesus will ever ask. Do you want to be made well? Well, get up. The path may seem hard and daunting, but Jesus shows us the way. And is there anyone's voice or anyone's promise that you can imagine would be more trustworthy than his.